There is so much that goes into one bottle of wine. So much time, so many resources, so much careful thought.
This big body of water, Lake Michigan, it has so much love to give us.
I was the young generation, now I'm the old one. It's funny how that happens, you know?
I'm adverse to publications of wine to some degree because the people that are writing these articles are living in a vacuum.
Americans have embraced wine more. We've become more of a wine culture.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 317. This week, we feature Paul Durant of Durant Vineyards in Willamette Valley, Oregon. To taste some of the very best Pinot Noir wines made in this country, you need to visit the Willamette Valley in Oregon. Winemakers both local and international have made the valley home to create these incredible wines. Being on the scene in the early days of winemaking, Paul Durant and his family define the idea of what it is to be a wine grower. While attending the Willamette Valley Pinot Noir auction, we met up with Paul the day before to chat about the vineyard and the wines. Paul always wanted to be a farmer, and he made his dream happen, but not in the way you might think. Listen to Paul on our Vino Lingo segment defining the wine term austere.
I'm here with Paul Durant, and we're at Durant Vineyards, and we are in, is it Dayton?
We are in Dayton. We're in the Dundee Hills AVA, but the address is Dayton.
Cool. So we're here this week for the Willamette Valley Pinot Noir auction, and of course doing a series of interviews here, and you're going to be at the auction.
Yeah, I will be there. Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about the auction itself. Who benefits from this auction?
You know, this is really benefits the Willamette Valley Wineries Association, which I'm also on the board of the association. So this is really about, you know, giving trade and kind of the bread and butter of the Oregon wine industry is kind of the trade and the media, a chance to really connect with winemakers on a really personal level, to kind of help tell the story of the Willamette Valley Winery Association and really kind of, you know, better us all. You know, we're all there. It's a neat auction because we're not there under our own labels. We're under there under Willamette Valley Winery Association. We all look the same.
Yeah.
The wines all taste different, but it's really fun because it kind of brings us all together in a really unique way.
How long has the association been around?
Oh, geez. You know, that the association's been around for probably 40-some years.
Wow.
You know, it was founded by kind of really the pioneers in the industry, and they kind of set up the overall AVA, and then kind of in the last 20 years, kind of all these sub-AVAs like the Dundee Hills have kind of started to populate the broader AVA.
And it's all about promoting the brands.
It's all about promoting the brands, you know, and I think it is in the best tradition of Oregon in terms of how much, you know, we collaborate. You know, we all work hard to make our best wines, and we're competitors in one sense, but we're also very much friends and neighbors in the other.
I think that's a tradition in the wine business, is that, you know, you guys, you're farmers, you help each other.
Yeah, I think that's really, because it kind of comes from, I mean, the backbone of the industry is farming, and, you know, it's how I grew up. My passion is farming, and so it really kind of, that thing was never lost in the wine business. So it's been great, especially in Oregon.
Well, let's talk about that. And you and I were talking on the way over here about how you did grow up. And let's go back to the family first for a minute. Now,
yeah.
The vineyards were established in 73, is that right?
Yeah, 1973, our first planting went in. It was a whole acre of Pinot Noir and an entire acre of Riesling.
Wow,
yeah.
2 acres.
Yeah, 2 whole acres.
But this was at a time where wine was not the household name for everybody.
Exactly. My dad kind of jokes about it, you know, at the time. You know, there was really, there was red, white, and pink was kind of the big flavors of wine. And so they were really kind of the forefront with kind of, you know, some of the other pioneers in the industry of establishing, you know, Oregon Pinot Noir. So it's been, for me, it's really intrinsic. For those guys, it was a big gamble. Yeah, real big. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that, you know, as we... You know, the industry's well over 50 years old now, and you know, there's a lot of new blood in it. I think sometimes, you know, we've got to pause a little bit and really. I saw a great quote the other day. you know, that we're kind of standing on the shoulders of some giants, and it's pretty special.
That's a great quote for a lot of reasons, and to get our listeners to understand that, you know, you guys are the second generation, not just here, but all over the United States, mm-hmm. because of what Prohibition did to us. Now, there are others that go back a little further, but
right.
that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, and I think it is what makes kind of the wine industry unique, you know, in terms of other industries, you know, here in the U.S. So,
yeah, completely unique. And again, it's very commonly, it's a family business.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And I think that was what makes it so charming too, especially in Oregon, because it is, you know, it's still in the giant scheme of things, it's a minuscule amount of production in terms of the, you know, certainly, you know, U.S. production and global.
Yeah, exactly. But still, Oregon's on the map now in a very big way.
It is. And that's super exciting. You know, what's really happened here in the last, you know, 10 years has just been, you know, obviously unprecedented for Oregon, but it's really, you know, kind of put us on the map in a really special way.
So when you grew up with this, I mean, I'm assuming that maybe you were drafted labor when you were a little bit younger.
My sister and I, we worked plenty of weekends and long summers, you know, planting grapes, watering grapes, pruning grapes, you know, a variety of things that we all, you know, it's kind of certainly in our DNA in the sense that we got drafted into it at a very early age.
Yeah, no kidding. So was there that point where you thought, I'm going to escape, I don't want to be a farmer?
Well, I've told the story many times, but I wanted to farm. I knew I wanted to farm in high school, and that's what I wanted to do. I love machinery, I love the dirt, I love the sun, the rain, the whole thing. And but my parents said, no, absolutely not. They're like, you are not going to farm. We don't want you to farm. So I didn't really have a choice. So I left.
This is the whole opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I left. I was gone for about 15 years. And I have a mechanical engineering degree. And I got to work in all kind of those fun places, you know, really industrial type engineering. And it was a great experience. I got to travel around the U.S. a lot. But my hope was always to come back here. And so I was afforded that opportunity. About 9 years ago. So it's been fantastic.
How did that opportunity come to you?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. So we were, I was with my sister at, she had bought me tickets to the Killers in Portland.
Okay, I'm really dying to know where this is going to go.
We were at the concert watching the Killers, and then of course, you know, we enjoyed the concert, and we go out and hit the bars in Portland, and my sister was raving about her career, how much she loved it. And she's like, how are you feel about yours? And I'm like, well, it's not what I love to do. And I said, you know, I really want to go back and farm. I want to work the vineyards. I want to get really immersed in the wine industry, you know, where, you know, you and I grew up. And she said, she just looked at me, well, what's stopping you? Are you waiting for mom and dad to die? And I said, well, yeah, I kind of am. and she was like, you know, well, that's not smart. And so that started the conversation with my folks. And at that time, my parents were in their early 70s, and they'd built this business up. They're still running it. But I think they were kind of like, where's their off-ramp from this? And so after a lot of discussion with them, I came back in. And I haven't looked back for a second. And it's been great. I get to work with my parents. I still learn from them every day. You know, they are still active participants in the business. I get to spend a lot of time with them. So what I get to do is so unique and super special. So, you know, I'm thankful every day.
It's a great life.
It's a great life. And I work in a beautiful part of the country. I live in Yamhill County. You know, it's fantastic.
Well, that was the thing when I came up here today, you know, the view from the winery was, I always talk about this and say to many wineries, wow, you win, but man, that's an amazing view from this, from the tasting room.
Oh, the tasting room, that view is spectacular. And they talk about, you know, there's those sayings, you know, I went to school in Texas and they talk about God's country, you know, that's Texas. Well, this place is truly God's country. It's just spectacular. And it's spectacular if it's, you know, piss and rain, or if it's 95 degrees, the beauty of it just never stops.
It's really spectacular too, because it's not always what you'd expect. I think maybe, you know, people go to places like Napa, Sonoma, that kind of thing, and they see maybe a little more of the glamour here. This is much more of a farming country, and you really get the root feel of things here when you drive around.
Yeah, and I think that's the little bit of the neat Oregon story. It's like, you know, there, you know, we share borders with grass seed growers and hazelnut farmers and agriculture is such a big part of, you know, you jump outside of the Portland metropolitan area, there's a lot of ag in Oregon, and it's a diversified agricultural community, and we all work together, you know, and it's been, you know, us wine guys are kind of up in the hills, you know, and there's the guys kind of down the valley floor, and but it is really it is very diversified, where maybe some other areas, you know, are a little bit more, you know, segregated.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Well, you have a lot of nurseries here too.
Yeah, a lot of nurseries. The operations are big.
No, very big. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was the thing, again, getting off the plane, driving here, I'm like, oh, things are green here already. This is nice.
Yep.
Because where I'm from, of course, it's not that way yet.
Yeah, it hasn't quite yet. Quite got the turn.
No, winter is clutching itself to us, and it's like the alien thing, you know what I mean? How old were you when you took over then?
So I was in my early 40s. So, you know, I'd had a nice chance to kind of work outside the business. So,
sure. Yeah. Well, I think that's a great thing, being able to come back into it, because you have an objective point of view and maybe newer ideas. Who knows?
Yeah, and I think, you know, a certain level of energy. You know, my dad jokes, you know, my dad had a career outside the family. It's kind of the same thing as, like, you know, how Dick Erath worked at Tektronix. You know, my father was an engineer, you know, and that's kind of how the industry, how our family business was built. And my dad jokes now, it's like he's working harder now than he was, you know, 25 years ago when he was, you know, working in the city. So it keeps him moving, that's for sure.
Well, you and I were talking before, it's not for the faint of heart. You're it's a back-breaking job. I mean,
yeah, it's daunting. It is daunting, and it is an interesting thing for winemakers and grape growers. I mean, it's value-added agriculture. You know, we're not working with a co-op to set a price that we're all going to live under. You know, we're all out there kind of living by our wits a little bit, and so you're constantly, you know, you're tending to the details of making sure that, you know, I want a great, you know, the first thing I got to do is I got to, you know, grow great wine grapes, not only for myself, but for the people that buy from us. And we really want those guys to crush it, you know, are the people we sell to in terms of great wines.
Well, you said that's how the business began, is that you were selling the grapes. And then how long ago was it when you started bottling?
So we did our first very small production under the Vineyards brand in 2003. So, but it's grown, you know, we are up to about 5,000 cases now. So, which is where I want to be.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that's a nice sweet spot for us. It's not so much that we can't move it through our tasting room. You know, we're still very boutique. I don't have any grand ambitions to be, you know, huge.
You know, that was the thing when I came up, and again, I met you in the tasting room. What a humble, polite, sweet little tasting room. It's great.
Yeah.
Not a lot of tchotchke going on. It's about the wine and, of course, the view. Sit down, have a drink.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's Adirondack chairs on the lawn, and, you know, it's very informal. It's very casual, you know, we don't have people running around in uniforms with name tags on.
No.
You know, we want them to be, you know, and I really strive to have a really kind of a diverse staff. You know, I have some young people, I have some older folks, because I think that the extent that your staff has great diversity, it's going to reflect the clientele that comes in the door. And we really, that's something that's really important to us. You know, and it makes the wines accessible.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't want to just be high-end Pinot. You know, we have a nice Pinot Gris and a Rosé that, you know, that people can afford and enjoy.
There are other wines out there.
Exactly.
Yeah, yep. That makes a big difference. So we were chatting a few minutes ago with Spencer Spantnagel, and I'm making sure I got that pronounced right. And he's your winemaker.
He's our winemaker.
And how long has he been making wine for you?
So he's been working for us. He's moving into his third season with us, so, which is really exciting. You know, Spencer, you know, he's that great combination of he's got some scar tissue, he's worked enough places, but he's still young enough that he still likes to work hard. So he was like, you know, it's like having a nice you know, youngish veteran on your team that kind of knows the drill.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And we met him last year and just chatted with him for a few minutes in the midst of all our interviews. And, you know, it's the thing about it, it still is a very young industry up here, which is really cool to see that.
Yeah, it is. And it's neat because it's a the industry overall is young enough and still small enough and growing fast enough that there is lots of opportunity, you know, for people to come in and get great experience and grow within the industry, not necessarily have to leave either. You know, you met our assistant winemaker, Vincent Rolleri, you know, local kid from McMinnville.
Nice guy.
Graduating from Chemeketa. You know, and he's staking his claim in the wine business.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I asked him, you know, do you want to be the winemaker one day or a winemaker? He says, yeah, of course. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you do this.
Yep, that's why you do it.
Yeah. This is not about money. I've yet to meet anybody who does. Even the wine industry, it's not about money. It's about passion.
It's about passion, 100%. Absolutely. And enjoying your, and having a great product that people enjoy. I mean, sharing that product and seeing people enjoy it, that's as good as it gets.
And the lifestyle that goes with it, being a farmer.
Yeah.
You know, not the fancy, glamorous one that people think of, but it's that idea of your hands are purple and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get to kind of, you know, your life doesn't revolve around an 8 or 10 hour day. It revolves around a season, you know, and that's just a great cadence to live your life by.
So when it comes to the tasting room and people tasting your wine, and maybe just your own opinion of wines in general, what's the kind of thing that makes you crazy, maybe when it comes to myths or things that people don't understand?
You know, I think it's a lot about, I think Pinot Noir is still a little bit of a misunderstood grape. I think people tend to want bigger wines. At times, and I don't like that. I mean, so I think that's a little bit, you know, we get a lot of people walking in that, hey, do you have like a big wine, you know, like a Cab or a Merlot or a Syrah? I'm like, no, we grow Pinot Noir up here and we make these very lithe, elegant, you know, kind of the feminine, you know, you hear masculine wines and you hear feminine wines, you know, I want these very feminine, very delicate wines to be made. The other big myth is around Chardonnay. You know, and I Chardonnay is 100% my passion. I it's like as a kid, I remember picking Chardonnay, and I love picking it because I got paid by the bucket from my folks, and they're big clusters.
At least you got paid.
And I got paid.
Yeah.
So I love picking it. It's such a distinctive flavor in the field for me. It's kind of like, it's a little bit like, you know, when you walk into your grandmother's house and, you know, smelling cookies and or you smell a cookie and it takes you back to your grandmother's house. That's for me for Chardonnay. It just reminds me a lot of my childhood. So, and that's also the big sell because Chardonnay is grown in every region of the world. It's the biggest selling varietal, you know, basically on the map. And so for us to carve out a niche for Chardonnay, has been really fun. I've really enjoyed it because Oregon Chardonnays they're just stellar.
They're very special. And again, Chardonnay as a whole is a very misunderstood grape.
It is. And it's grown in so many different ways and it's really processed so many different ways. And I think for Oregon to put itself on the map with it has been really neat to see because they're super distinctive wines.
And you know, as somebody, I mean, I'm going to say the thing you're probably going to hate hearing. I'm not the biggest Chardonnay drinker in the world, but boy, when I find one I like, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to have some around for when friends come over because it's a great wine. But you got to find what fits with you.
You got to find what fits. And that's a little bit of the kind of the, I mean, it's overplayed, but people talk about the ABC thing, anything
right,
but
right.
Chardonnay. But but it's kind of true because you can buy a jug of it for like, you know,
sure.
$8.
Yes, you can.
You know, from Australia, and it doesn't taste very good, you know. And so then you're kind of playing against that a little bit.
But in the end, I mean, wouldn't you agree? The idea is wine is very broad. And now we're hearing the glass in the background.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm going to make a point real quick. Vinny's out back and he's breaking some glass.
Yeah.
And this is part of the atmosphere of an interview. I like that. The idea is that there are so many different wines out there, whether it's wines you're making or not. I'm sure you drink well outside of just what you have here in Oregon.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I really, and I, again, I, even like some of those more, those bigger Chardonnays, I really like all Chardonnays. A really well-made Chardonnay out of California or, you know, obviously, you know, out of Europe, those are delicious wines. And they speak to how they were made. And just as we were trying to do the same thing here.
Yeah. And then you said you were starting a sparkling program.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So, you know, I think, I don't want to say, you know, it's like we're kind of followers in that regard, but I feel like we're kind of followers in that regard. There's a lot of, it's kind of the new thing here with the sparkling program. It is a little bit of like, probably not what I would choose to do, but Spencer, our winemaker, is very passionate about sparkling wines. So I want to let him explore his passion. And so it'll be a great learning experience for us, you know, and it'll be good. It'll be fun.
What a great attitude for an owner to be able to say, please, please do what you think you can make into something.
Well, I think so much of what I want these guys to be inspired, and I want them to stay.
Mm, yeah.
You know, I want them to stick around and feel like they have some skin in the game and a vested interest in doing kind of what they want to do, you know. And I think that's a lot of, it's also kind of the Oregon story where you have some winemakers, they maybe they work in a big facility, but they got their label off on the side, you know, and they're innovating on the side, you know. And I want Spencer and my team, I want them to innovate, you know, in conjunction with, you know, not kind of, you know, as they can fit it in.
That's a great attitude for an owner, because it's an influence that spreads down, because you're like you say, you're giving them a piece of the skin in the game thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
And wine, it's all about, I mean, great things happen with risk, and I think winemaking is no different.
Exactly.
Yeah, so double down a little bit.
And there's a little bit of risk in the wine business, isn't there?
No, just a skosh.
Yes. I got a question I've been asking people on the last year or so. It's been a kind of a fascinating one, and you can take a moment to think about it, but I don't know how many opportunities you get to talk to the media and do these kind of interviews, but what's the question you don't get asked that you'd like to be asked?
You know, I think oftentimes people, as much as we talk in the industry about great, and winemakers love to talk about this too, about, oh, you know, I just take what the fruit gives me and I suss it out. But I think that the questions, and again, I always want to get asked more about the farming side of it. Like, what does that really mean? Because I think it's really, that's just a segue into talking about the wine. It's really not talking about the farming. And so I think those are the questions that I always relish. It's like, what is it about your site or what you do or like what you know that makes great wine?
Well, that was easy, because you just kind of led into your own question for me then. What is it that makes you different? What sets you apart?
So I think it's because we're small. I think we have a great vineyard crew. Our vineyard foreman has worked for my folks for 20 years, you know, long time. And I think that we really understand our dirt, and we take care of our dirt. You know, I think when we came down here to the winery, you may have seen, you know, lime spread. We've been spraying lime. We don't spray glyphosate, you know, Roundup. You know, we spend the extra money for weed control. We manage our canopy really well. You know, we have really clean fruit, and we take chances too with it. Because we know what our vineyard can do. And I think I've developed enough trust with our winery clients that they're like, okay, Durant kind of knows. He's a good farmer. And so I don't see winemakers here, but just right at the bitter end. So they don't have to be kind of micromanaging, and they have a lot of faith in what we do. And that also relates to kind of the, obviously the wines that we're making are kind of, they all come from the same, whether it ends up in a bottle of Patricia Green Cellars or it's in our wine, you know, those are tended to just the same way. Yeah.
It's the pride in what you do.
Pride in what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more satisfying than seeing Durant Vineyards or Durant on another winemaker's bottle, you know, and that's, as a farmer, that's about as good as it gets.
That's a big deal. And what you're doing for Durant for your own label, it is all estate then.
It's 100% estate, which is really cool. I mean, because that's, again, that is me being just really lucky, because my parents came out here, and these are the crazy stories. I remember picking peaches down here and this lady who was running this peach orchard came out and said, you know, Paul, we just felt so sorry for your parents when they bought that that hillside ground, because it didn't grow anything. And she said, and look at them now. You know, this was after kind of the industry had grown. And quite honestly, my dad says if they could have afforded it at the time, they would have bought Valley ground and they would be farming filberts or later became hazelnuts, but they didn't have any money. So the cheap dirt was up here in the hills. But you know, that was 40, 50 years ago.
It's amazing how things played out in this business.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really knew where this was all going.
No, I think, you know, nobody thought it was going to be, you know, a walk-off home run. It just took 50 years to get there.
Yeah. And now you're kind of sitting on the top of the mountain somewhat, you know, when it comes to Pinot. This is one of the top states, if not in many ways the top state in the country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And Chardonnay too. I'm sorry, I shouldn't leave that out, because Chardonnay is a big deal in terms of quality and coming from here. People seek it out now.
People seek it out. You know, we laugh about it. You know, more than half our vineyard was planted to Chardonnay in the 80s. You know, but then we repeated the vineyard in the 90s, and just like everybody else in the valley, Chardonnay came out. You know, we're fortunate enough we kept, you know, 10 acres or so. Just, and I kind of credit it to my mom, because Chardonnay was really hard to sell. We didn't get paid a lot for it. And, but she was like, it might come around. So, have some of our best ground, which would have been Pinot Noir ground, is planted to Chardonnay.
And that's a classic farmer statement, isn't it?
It is.
The idea of not getting that money for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just back to how many acres you're farming here, because you took me around the property, and it's quite a really an amazing piece of property to see. But how many acres do you have here?
So we have a total of about 135, and about 65 of that is in vine. And we're planting about another 8, which my dad and I are laughing about. Like, why are we planting more grapes, you know? So it's like, well, I guess it's just kind of what we do.
It just keeps you off the streets.
Yeah, exactly.
For your tasting room, can people just come up here? Is it by appointment? How does it
hold? No, we are open to the public. We're open 7 days a week from 10 to 5. So it's really accessible. It's a great piece of property, too. And this is, again, I know I've talked way too much about my parents. But my mom, that place up that where the tasting room's located and the nursery and everything, that was her vision. And she really wanted to be a place where you could come in there and you could get out of your car, wander through the nursery, check out the lavender field, sneak back to your car, and we'd never know you were there. You know, there's no entrance where we funnel you through, and then a rope line we try to funnel you out.
It's not predetermined.
And we get a lot of people that just come, if nothing else, to look at that view, or find a secret spot kind of down the lavender to read a book. And
yeah. I can see that. I'm going to come back to where I was going with that, but one last thing I want to talk about, and that is that you make your own olive oil here.
Yes, we make our own olive oil.
That's pretty cool.
Which in this case, I'm the lead miller. So every fall for about 2 months, I get to run, really it's the only commercial mill in Oregon.
Really?
Yep. So it's small, and we make about anywhere from 20 to 30,000 liters a year. And olive oil, I could wax on about it just as much as I do about farming and wine, but it's such a special product. You know, it's the oldest cultivated crop, you know, in the civilized world. And it's got such symbology going back to just, you know, the dove, the symbol of peace. It's really tied, you know, the Middle East. I mean, there's so much history there. And so for me, it's really fun. And it brings all kinds of people here who would never come out to wine country, except they come for olive oil, because it's a cultural icon, or they're really immersed in the food scene. And it's such a great complement to food.
Well, not only that, yeah, that's just it. It's great to cook with, and it's great to have with food and any opportunity. Olive oil's fantastic.
It's great, and it's such a compliment to the wine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, completely.
So, yeah.
So for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, what is your website?
So our website is drantoregon.com.
Excellent. Paul, I appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure it's a busy week, and I wish you nothing but the best with your lot.
Well, thank you so much. It's really fun for me to get to share kind of the history of my family. It's very special, and I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Oh, cheers. And here are the bottles as we go out.
Learn more by visiting DurantOregon.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak and Catherine Shearer. Copyright 2019.